Welcome into the Sports Objective. We appreciate you tuning in, however and whenever you're listening to the show. Remember, you can find us on most any podcast platform. Plus, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel as we're closing in on 500 subscribers. Make sure you ring the notification bell so you're alerted when we release new content. And we have plenty headed your way over the next few days and weeks as the Pirates are headed to Annapolis to take on ACC foe Boston College in the Military Bowl. And then obviously also East Carolina basketball will resume action here in the next few days as they will take on Liberty down in Charlotte at the Spectrum Center, the Hornets Arena, very talented Liberty Ball Club. So an excellent test for Joe Dooley and company. And then they'll return home on Tuesday the 21st, a rare noon tip-off against Southern Miss before beginning league play on the 29th of December against Wichita State as the Shockers come to Williams Arena Menjes Coliseum to take on what could potentially be a 10-2 East Carolina team. Today we have a huge show for you as we have conversations with East Carolina AD John Gilbert, who just started his fourth year at the helm of the Pirates athletic program. We discuss Mike Houston's contract extension and pay raise as Coach Houston went from $1.5 million annually to $2.3 million. And we also talk about scheduling a forthcoming capital campaign and a whole lot more. You also hear a 20-plus minute chat with the eighth-year baseball coach of the Pirates, Cliff Godwin, as we talked a variety of topics with the 2022 season quickly approaching. Season tickets went on sale today, today being Monday, December 13th, so be sure to reserve your spot or spots at Clark LeClair Stadium for this spring, as it promises to be another tremendous campaign for the Pirates on the diamond. ECU will be seeking to host a fourth straight regional and capture another AAC championship. Just call 1-800-ECU or go online to ecupirates.com to get your season tickets today. Right now, without any further ado, let's go ahead and go to that conversation with East Carolina Athletics Director John Gilbert.
Happy as always to have a visit with this next gentleman, and very happy with all the things going at ECU, right, Bubba?
Yeah, very excited right now to be joined by the Director of Athletics at East Carolina University, John Gilbert. John, how are you?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Glad to have you on, John. It's hard to believe time is flying, but 3 years ago you took the job. I believe it was December the 3rd, if my memory serves me right. First of all, an interview, just wanted to get your reflection on, it's hard to believe it's been 3 years, but I know that all your hard work is starting to pay off.
Well, it certainly has been an eventful 3 years. A lot of positives, a few things I'd like to forget or don't want to be reminded of. But all in all, just pleased that, you know, we're starting to trend in the right direction from a football standpoint. You know, just so many positive things that took place on the field this year that, you know, I think there's renewed hope and understanding that we're headed in the right direction.
John, at what point during the season, as we look back, for you personally, did you realize that we were going to kind of probably get to where we need to be in terms of getting back to a bowl game and putting a good product on the field?
Well, we joke in athletics, you know, somebody will come up and, you know, tell us, you know, things are great or things are not going well. And we joke internally that, you know, your approval rating in athletics really is day to day. And for me, I think the turning point was the fourth quarter of the Marshall game. You know, we started out 0-2. You're going into the fourth quarter, and, you know, human nature, you're thinking, man, if we don't pick it up, we're about to go 0-3. That is not what our expectation was for this season. And then, you know, you beat a good Marshall team on the road, and you could just feel like, you know, our players and our staff, you know, I think they always believe that they could do it, but actually doing it on the field, I do feel like that was a turning point for us.
Yeah, you mentioned that Marshall game. Obviously, then we went on the three-game winning streak and got rolling, got bowl eligible at Memphis, and went on from there. Look ahead, obviously, to the bowl game, and we'll circle back around, but we look ahead to the bowl game, December 27th, Annapolis, Maryland, 2:30 p.m. kickoff. Get your tickets to cupirates.com. Talk about how bowl ticket sales are going, and how soon did you know we were headed to Annapolis before it was officially announced?
Well, I had a let me back up. Ticket sales are going really well. I think we're a little over 4,000 tickets sold. And, you know, really good for us because we do get to keep the revenue that is associated with ticket sales. And then, you know, I knew at the Navy game, I met with the Military Bowl. They were that week leading up to the game, they indicated they wanted to talk. And I talked to quite a few bowl people. And then really, I felt like after the Navy win, I felt like it was a real possibility because I did learn that the Military Bowl has the second pick in the American Athletic Bowl lineup. And so I knew in short order that the Military Bowl said, you know, if you're not picked to number one, we're not letting you slide out of the number two slot. So I felt pretty good about where that was after the Navy game.
And, John, that obviously with the Military Bowl is great because, as you know, we have a big fan base, alumni all over the place, being the big university that we are. But in that DMV, the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area, a lot of course, alums, and then a lot of alums on the East Coast and not too far away. It's a great, not only location as far as drive, but also for the fact that there's a lot to do there.
Well, there really is. I think, number one, from a location standpoint, people from Eastern North Carolina can get to Annapolis in relatively short order, and they don't have to hop on a plane to do it. I think the second positive is we're getting to play an ACC opponent. You always want to, you know, play teams from that league given our location and proximity. You know, we've never played Boston College, so I think that is, you know, that's a huge positive. So all the way around, I think it's a really good fit for us.
John, shifting gears, obviously you talked about everything that's trending in the right direction. Now we see the tangible on-field results, things that you know, have been, it's an extension of what you've seen behind the scenes from a culture standpoint and with what Coach Houston and the staff are implementing and continuing to do so. Just talk about the recent contract extension and also the pay raise. That's putting Coach Houston in the upper third of the American. And then also talk about the staff compensation, because I had not seen a number there. Where does that stand?
Well, one, I think it's important. You know, we need to invest in our sports teams when they're successful. And if you look at Coach Houston and where his staff were, you know, they were at the bottom of the league. We finished tied for third in a competitive league with three teams that are still you know, looking to leave to go to the Big 12. And so I felt good about where we were in conference and our competitiveness. We need stability, you know, and so the time is now to invest in Coach Houston and his staff. So excited to back him up an additional 3 years and take him back to five with the additional compensation certainly warranted. We'll put them in the you know, top third, but not at the top of the American. And, you know, we're still working through of exactly where our assistant coaches will land, but certainly time to invest in them as well. And so, you know, there are a lot of things that football drives from an athletic department standpoint, and the more you can, you know, stabilize your football program, the better off you are.
John, conference realignment, hot topic about a month, 2 months ago. It always seems to come up at different times. I don't think it's ever going to be over. How do you feel about what the American did, the decisions they made with that? Orasco and whoever made those decisions clearly went after media markets. And I think some of that, personally, me speaking, I think some of that is really good. Some of that I did not like at all. You look at the Sun Belt and what they did going with more of a regional model. What do you think about the additions to the American and where we stand in terms of a conference? And I have a follow-up to that with the television revenue. I just wanted to confirm what I've heard, that the current teams in the American, the television revenue would stay the same, but it would be different for the new members?
That is correct, and I think as you look at the landscape of the expansion, the positive, you know, we can debate, you know, a school's merit, you know, all day. I think the big takeaway for ECU is, you know, our conference distribution, you know, TV contract is going to remain, you know, stable for the foreseeable future. You know, the new members are coming in on a, you know, tiered process that eventually they'll get to a full share, but it's going to take a little while to get there. And so we have remained stable in that regard. And I think that's the big positive, because as you look at the landscape, you know, my expectation when those three teams announced they were leaving, I was concerned about taking, you know, a really big haircut on what the TV distribution would be, and that didn't happen. Now, to your comment earlier, it is, you know, it's never done. So if we stay intact, I feel really good about it. If another team or two leaves, then obviously, you know, we're back in a different discussion. So feel really good about where that is. And then the other piece for us is, you know, I talk to our student athletes all the time about who our rival is. They always mention teams, you know, 90 miles to our west that are not in our league. And I say, no, tell me in our league who our rival is. And we really don't have one. And so I do think with the addition of Charlotte, the ability to play a conference opponent that you can bus to, that's in-state, that fans can travel to, I'm not saying that they're going to be a rival overnight, but certainly us playing each other in each other's backyard, there are going to be some positive things in that regard.
Is there any talk about Charlotte expanding their stadium so East Carolina fans can actually attend?
I'm not sure what Charlotte is doing with their facilities. I focus on ECU. I've got enough to say grace over right now.
Yeah, speaking of scheduling, you talk about Charlotte. Charlotte was on the schedule for 2024 and then also 2025. So if you would touch on those openings and then just scheduling as a whole, some of the opponents in coming years, you have regional foes like Wake Forest, South Carolina, Marshall, and Georgia State. You also have intersectional opponents. Very exciting to see BYU and then also Boise State on the schedule. So talk about your philosophy there. I know also in 26 and 28, we're short a game, but we don't currently have SCS opponents on the schedule, so I'm guessing that's the direction we'll go on those seasons.
Well, scheduling's tricky, as we all know. Obviously, we've got NC State at home to open the season, and next year we go out to BYU in October. We've got the Michigan bye game in 23. In 24, Charlotte comes off the schedule as a non-conference opponent. We're going to add in an FCS opponent there in 24, and then we also have another game we need to get. So we would go FCS opponent at Old Dominion, App State at home, need a game. 25, we've got NC State and BYU both at home. 26, we've got West Virginia at Boise and App State. 27, South Carolina and Wake Forest. 28, NC State and Boise. And then really 29 and beyond, we did a long-term home-and-home with ODU that's still on the books, and we'll need to add some games. So really, I guess the immediate need is 24. We need a FCS game that we're working on, and then another FBS game to be determined.
On the lines of scheduling, obviously everybody wants to play Power Five opponents, but a couple of regional so-called Group of Five programs that have been of interest to me. Coastal Carolina has become, you know, coming to prominence. Seems like it would be a team we would have some interest in playing from a regional standpoint. And perhaps Liberty?
Yeah, obviously I'm in favor of playing regional teams. You know, when it comes down to scheduling, again, you start talking to some of these teams, and they are booked until, you know, 2030 and beyond. It can get a little hairy going that far out. So we'll continue to look at teams. Like I'm looking at Coastal schedule now, they're full in 24. But in later subsequent years, you know, there may be opportunity there.
John, I had two questions to add to that. One, add to the scheduling, any hope for UNC? And then the other would be, as far as I know at the press conference last week, a week ago with Mike Houston, you talked about potentially a capital campaign for next year. Is that something we could expect as far as an indoor practice facility and other things for baseball and other sports?
I do anticipate a capital campaign sometime after the first of the year. It will be comprehensive in nature, where all our sports teams will have the opportunity to fundraise for different projects for sports. It'll be projects that really all of our sports can be affiliated with. And so the Pirate Club and myself will be busy talking to our fan base about helping invest in some of those projects.
John, you mentioned the Pirate Club, and one thing that, you know, I've had on my mind for a while now is ways to grow the Pirate Club. The Pirate Club numbers have shrank over the last 10 years dramatically. Have we came up with any, you know, the typical ways that the Pirate Club has done things for years now? Have we come up or tried to come up with any new creative ideas for the Pirate Club to try to grow it? That's something that, you know, when you're talking about fundraising, if you got a bigger pool to draw from, that obviously helps.
Yeah. Well, I would say over the years, like in general, most departments' annual funds have taking a hit. Now, we did do a special campaign last year called We Believe, where we did a six-week campaign and generated almost $1 million for that, you know, just a hair shy of a million. And so we'll continue to do special projects like that. We'll also do sports-specific fundraising where if you want to give to a particular sports program for their restricted fund, we will, you know, do that as well. And so private giving is going to be real important for the Pirates as we try to move this program forward.
Kind of along those lines with the Pirate Club, one of the things that I often hear as a rep here in the greater Charlotte area, and then, you know, dealing with former athletes and that are out of the region that can't get back to games as frequently as they'd like, sure, you hope people are, you know, giving just because they want to support the program, but a lot of folks, you know, like something tangible and to see that they got something for their gift in addition to just helping the program. So I know down through the years there have been things like, you know, certain prints or a variety of things that have been given to Pirate Club donors. And so what are your thoughts on something like that?
All in favor. We need to do things to get people engaged and, you know, find ways to entice them to give. So I'm all in favor of doing those types of things.
Bubba and I were discussing before we got on the line about next year's home schedule. It's a very attractive home schedule. NC State does in the year, other non-conference games against Campbell, which is a, you know, good regional opponent. You Old Dominion's coming. You know that they Ricky Ronnie's done a great job up there. They're a bowl team this year down in the Myrtle Beach Bowl, another regional opponent. And then you look at the conference slate. I believe you got UCF, Navy, Houston, Memphis, which are all attractive conference games. So it's a very nice home schedule next year with seven home games. When will season tickets go on sale? Any thought of, you know, after the bowl game, particularly if we win it, doing something promotional for a limited amount of time to sell the season tickets maybe at a lower rate? And are prices going to stay in a similar price range? I know with the seventh home game is in NC State, it seems like they might go up. So what's that going to be like?
Well, a couple of things. One, it is an attractive, schedule. Two, we will roll out our football season tickets here in the near future. What we are looking at what our pricing will be with the seven home games, you know, they will be higher because you're going to have an additional home game. We haven't landed on the exact price for that. But I think it's also an important piece. Like, you know, at some point we've got to drive ticket sales and try to fund it if we all want the program to be what we want it to be. Like, it takes funds to do that. So the more you discount tickets like we've had to do just to get people to come, it really does have an impact on the funding of your program. So I'm hopeful that we'll have a robust season ticket sales again with NC State at home. I would think we would do very well in the season ticket campaign for next year.
No doubt, John. I think that's like the guys were saying, especially when Mike Houston does such a great job on the field and with everything that he's meant to the program. What other things would you like to see as far as I know we talked about the indoor practice facility, which is A number one, but as far as football is concerned, are there other things, the stadium upgrades or things that we can do looking ahead?
Well, I think there are going to be a multitude of projects. We need to do a massive renovation of our swimming locker room in the aquatic center, the indoor practice facility. We've got a baseball locker room renovation. We need to look at the space in our teams building for all the sports programs that are out there. So I think that there is going to be a multitude of projects that our fan bases, we're going to ask them to help us invest in those to ensure the success and sustainability of ECU athletics.
Yeah, and I have a follow-up to that, John. The scoreboard, hard to believe, I think, sitting there for 11 years now. And the PA system, at times this year, it sounded wonderful. I think the Temple game, for example. Other times, it sounded like somebody was talking into a football phone from Sports Illustrated. Are we going to do something to address the sound system? And is the scoreboard going to be replaced anytime soon? And I heard a rumor. You know how rumors go. You can confirm or deny this. Is there talk of putting ribbon boards on the Soundbeck Tower?
Well, we are looking at replacing the scoreboard for next year and some of the boards on the inside. The final plan we have not finalized, so still some room to go there. But from a scoreboard standpoint, we absolutely need to replace it. It's we can't really get parts for the ones that we have now, so we're holding our breath down the stretch of what we could do for it. So we certainly will be looking towards, doing that.
As far as East Carolina basketball, we have not touched on the tremendous start and Pirates off an 8-2 record, and I have Liberty and Southern Miss remaining in the non-conference portion of the schedule, but, you take a look at it, with Southern Miss and then Wichita State at home when the students are still on break. Just talk about some of the things that you and Eric Ward with sports marketing are going to do to ensure that we have solid crowds like the other night the students had over 1,100 there.
Well, certainly pleased about where our men's basketball program is from a start standpoint, 8-2, undefeated at home. So really moving in a positive direction, and just can't say enough about our students, how often that they are showing up. And so we're hopeful, even though it's a noon start, that, we're going to reach out to the local student population and see if we can't get them to come to the game and be supportive when we take on both Southern Miss and Wichita State.
Curious to know, what's up with the noon start on a weekday?
It's a doubleheader. It's the last day of play before the break. We typically, on a doubleheader, the women, would play first and then the men. We reversed it this time because of Southern Miss's travel. And so we're going to play them early and allow them time where they can get back home for their Christmas break as well.
Yes, John, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll wish you the best for 22. Merry Christmas to you and your family, and looking forward to seeing you at the bowl game and all of next year.
Look forward to it. Happy holidays. Thanks, guys. Go Pirates.
There you have our conversation with East Carolina's fourth-year athletics director, John Gilbert. Always appreciate his willingness to come on the program and look forward to having him back very soon. Right now, we'll not waste any time. We'll go directly to our conversation with Cliff Godwin, the eighth-year head baseball coach of the Pirates, joined us recently to discuss a variety of topics, and let's go to that right now.
Well, I know we're recording this interview. It's kind of like a hot stove league kind of interview today. It's cold outside, but we're very excited to have with us now head baseball coach of the East Carolina Pirates, and that would be Cliff Godwin. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
No doubt, Coach. We obviously wanted to have you on. Busy. I don't even know if there really is an off season anymore, but we want to get a chance to talk about, the 2021 campaign, put a bow on it, and get your thoughts. We hadn't had you on since the season ended, so we want to give you a thumbnail schedule on what your thoughts were of the season.
I thought our guys and our staff did a tremendous job last year. You know, people forget, just going through fall practice in 2020 with all the COVID stuff going on and then starting the season with no fans and then having to play a conference schedule that had 4 9-inning games in 3 days, no midweek games. And for our guys to stay consistent through the year and our staff to be able to manage all that stuff, I mean, looking back on it, it's one of the biggest feats that's ever happened at East Carolina University, in my opinion, because it was a grind, man, especially those four game weekends in 3 days. Once we got about halfway, it takes the staff and the players about 2 days to kind of get our feet back underneath us, practice a couple days, and you're right back into it. And for us to be able to host a regional again for 3 straight years, I think we're one of 3 teams that have done that in the country. And to have Clark LeClair in the jungle packed for the regional, that regional environment was the loudest I think it's ever been at Clark LeClair since I've been here. It was just a great atmosphere, and our guys performed well. And, of course, we go to Vanderbilt, and our guys competed and went toe-to-toe with the second-place team in the country. And we got to figure out a way how we can host a super regional here in Greenville, North Carolina. That's going to be the ticket for us to knock that door down and play in the College World Series.
Coach, you had a couple of staff changes. If you would, talk about Austin Knight taking over for Jason Dietrich. Awesome opportunity for Coach Dietrich moving on to Cal State Fullerton as their head coach, and then Austin Knight sliding over to that role. He'd worked very closely with Coach Dietrich anyway, so talk about that transition.
Well, Austin, I've known Austin for a long time. You know, he was a catcher at Ole Miss for the 3 years that I was there, so his freshman, sophomore, junior year, he probably spent more time with me than he wanted to because I was his catching coach, I was his hitting coach, I was his academic coach. But I knew he wanted to get into coaching one day, and I've kind of just followed his career. And then when we had the opportunity to bring him here a few years ago, he's just a great baseball guy. He's a great human being. But he told me, he goes, one day I want to be a pitching coach. And so we started letting him be around the pitchers and helping Coach Dietrich. And normally you have about 20 guys on the staff, so it really – was a plus for all of us that he wanted to do that. And he would stand next to Coach Dietrich during the game, and then I would stand on the other side, and they would collaborate on pitch calling. And Coach Dietrich was a great mentor. But, you know, people have asked, you know, why did I choose Austin Knight? Well, I chose Austin Knight because he's going to be one of the best pitching coaches in the country. And, yes, he might not have some of the experience that other guys, and we had a ton of interest in the job with where our program is right now, and could have got some head coaches that wanted to just be our pitching coach at East Carolina. But I knew from day one who I was going to hire, and that was Austin Knight.
In addition to Coach Knight, there's obviously another staff change on Coach Macias, David Macias, coming over from Vanderbilt.
Yes, Coach Macias actually was a freshman at Vanderbilt when I was the director of baseball operations, and same sort of thing. Have watched his career, and probably a blessing in disguise that he was on the Vanderbilt staff in the Super Regional. Got to spend some time with him there and talking with Eric Backage about him and what type of coach he is. And he's been at the professional level as a player, as a coach. He's been a strength coach in college. He's been an assistant coach at one of the best programs in the country. And it's really, we're really blessed to be able to bring him from a program like Vanderbilt into our program. And our guys love him. He's super knowledgeable. He'll be in charge of the catchers. He's already made our catchers a lot better. He also works with our outfielders. He also helps me and Jeff with the hitters and just team defense and everything. And he's brought a lot of good ideas to our program already, and he's a great person, and we're super excited about him and Pam, his wife, and they have three kids, all under the age of three, so that's been interesting. But he loves Greenville already, and it's just been a great addition to our staff.
Coach, before we start to dive in a little bit about the roster for this season, I wanted to obviously brag about you and your support staff and coaches about off the field with volunteering, but specifically about academics. We always like to talk about that with you, and I want to give you the floor, a chance to brag about the team. Once again, an unbelievable GPA considering all that you guys have to go through.
Well, people forget, and even sometimes me, I forget, but when we took the job, and Jeff and I are the only two from day one that have been here at East Carolina back in the summer of 2014, well, at that point in time, and I'm kind of embarrassed to say it, but ECU baseball on record, it had only been tracked for the previous 7 years, had never made a 3.0 team GPA. So me being a former guy that the parents made do really well in school, two-time academic All-American at East Carolina, I tell people the only way I could be an All-American was to add the academic piece into it. But that was our first goal. And that first semester, we got a 3.05, and you would have thought, we won the College World Series is how happy we were as a staff. And now you fast forward to today, and with the guys that we're bringing in and the support staff and Rebecca Wade putting a huge emphasis on it, we've gone 4 straight years. So that's 8 straight semesters of having a 3.41 team GPA or higher. And once again, this semester will be 4.5 years because the final grades haven't come in, but our guys are in exams right now, and they've done a really good job. And it means a lot to me because at some point in time, baseball is going to be over. Some of them are going to have the opportunity to play professional baseball for how long, who knows. But we got to make sure that they have a great education so they can set themselves up and their families for the rest of their life.
Coach, if you would tell us about this fall, how did things go? Which returners, you know, made some nice strides? What newcomers impressed you? And you also had the opportunity, one of the great things of being located where we're located, so many great teams within a 3-4 hour radius, and you were able to get some work in against Liberty and UVA.
This fall has been pretty challenging. It might be the most challenging fall for me personally. And, you know, it started with the passing of Nico Agnos, a guy that's been such a great person of our program with Jake and Zach. And, you know, a lot of times you get to know parents, their kid comes in. Well, you know, I've known the Agnoses for probably over 8 years, and just having to navigate that. And of course, Zach dealing with it. But I mean, it hurt me too, because I was close to Nico. And then as soon as we kind of got through the celebration of life and stuff, I got COVID, and having to navigate through that. And we're right at the beginning of the fall practice, but I thought our guys, and especially Zach Agnos, man, did a really good job of just showing up every day. And that's all you can ask, is just showing up every day and trying to get better. And we definitely have an opportunity to be pretty good in the spring. And I tell people all the time that on paper we're pretty good. So, but guess what that gets you? That gets you nothing. So you got to go out there and do it in the spring and stay humble and stay hungry.
Coach, I know you had the Purple Gold World Series, a chance for the kind of inter-squad scrimmage, but can you talk about that? And also, we'll start off as far as the roster. Really happy to see that you're pretty deep, it looks like, with pitching.
Yes, the Purple Gold World Series, we always finish the fall with that. And you mentioned earlier about us playing Liberty. Liberty's really good. They've got really good arms, and we tied the first 7-inning game, had a 5-3 lead going into the top of the seventh, and gave that up, tied the first game, then we won the second game. UVA, we lost game one in 7 innings, 12-6, and then won, I think, 6-1 in game two. And just getting especially some new faces out there is always a good thing, and especially on the mound. Our pitching depth, especially the freshman class, in my opinion, it's the most talent that we've had in any freshman class. But they're still freshmen. They're still working through some things. And got to get him in the strike zone a little bit more. But I thought Coach Knight and those freshmen and other guys make tremendous strides within our program this fall, and just looking forward to them when they get back in the spring and to continue to see their development.
Some of those proven commodities on the mound, Coach, obviously, and guys, lefties like Wisenhunt and Cooch Maynard. Talk about Cooch. I heard some great things and was unable to make it out to any of the Purple Gold World Series or those games against Liberty or UVA, but talk about Cooch. I heard he was more like the old Cooch this fall.
Coach Knight and him worked a ton and watched old video from 2 years ago, and just they did some mechanical tweaks to kind of get him back right. His stuff's way better. He's throwing the ball harder, which can only help him. Stuff is, like I said, just better, just sharper. Breaking ball's better. Change-up's good. Thought he tried to overthrow early in the fall, and he was just kind of getting used to the extra velocity. The last two outings against UVA and the Purple Gold World Series, he pitched really good. Was outstanding. And if he can sustain that, then we're going to be in good shape. Wisenhunt did not pitch in the fall, from the workload that he had in the spring and then also being with Team USA. So he has been playing catch since November and is starting to get off the mound right now. So he'll actually be in front of the other guys that pitch this fall because they have to shut down, and they just are getting ready to start picking up a baseball this week.
Coach, can you talk about, obviously, with the infielders, one of the great things that you've created at East Carolina, I think, with recruiting is with the competition. Competition is a great thing. Can you talk about your infielders coming back?
Well, rent's due every day if you're going to be in a quality program. And, you know, we played Ryder at short and Zach Agnos at short this fall on opposite teams most of the time. Zach also played some third base. Makarevich spent most of his time at second this fall just trying to get him a feel of that position. I think that he will be better at third base just because he's played there more. Jacob Starling was actually injured this fall. He's about 95% healthy right now, but he'll be an option at second. Joey Green will be an option at second. C.J. Boyd's a utility infielder, second, first, outfield. He had a really good fall swinging the bat. Ryder was tremendous at shortstop, and we worked on his swing a little bit. He seems to be hitting the ball and having more quality at-bats, the best of his career. And Zach had a really good fall, especially considering the circumstances with his dad. So we have some depth there, Josh Mullen at first base and some others. So it'll be interesting, you know, be tougher on the coaching staff to figure out who's going to be on the field at any given time.
In the outfield, you have proven commodities like Bryson Wall. So if you would touch on those guys, and then also talk about the return of Skylar Brooks. He unfortunately sustained an injury, and how's he progressing?
Well, let's start with Bryson. Bryson, and I don't know how many people know this, but the last game of the conference tournament in the first inning, he went up against the wall, made a great catch, and just had a really bad sprain of his left AC joint. In his shoulder, he didn't take BP for 2 weeks, so played in the regional, didn't take BP, finally took BP, like a very brief, abbreviated version of Vandy in game one. He wasn't healthy. I would say he was 50% healthy going down the stretch, and it actually took him most of the summer just to kind of get his shoulder back healthy. So he started out a little bit slow, but I'm expecting big things from him, a guy that's played a ton of baseball. Riley Johnson had a tremendous fall. Him and Bryson, one of those two guys will play center field. And if they're not playing center, they'll probably play right. Carter Cunningham, a junior college transfer, had a tremendous fall. He still needs to continue to work on his defense a little bit, but left-handed hitter, can hit the ball out of the park, can run. So excited about him. And then Lane Hoover. So Hoover is the, you know, ultimate worker, voted by his teammates, the hardest working position player on the team, and also voted by his teammates to be the best teammate, which means that dude does everything he can to help the team get better every single day. So definitely have some depth out there, and there's some other guys that could, you know, AMAC can go out to the outfield, and C.J. Boyd as well.
Coach, I wanted to mention one thing before we go. I know Bubba has another question, too. Appreciate you carving out some time for us. Now you've got a speaking engagement today. Wanted to ask you as far as make sure we can plug the baseball banquet. Every year it gets bigger and bigger, and we want to make sure that we raise a lot of money for you.
Well, February 5th is the date, and I can tell you this, there's been more interest this year than there's ever been. So if you want to get a ticket, I would definitely do it before Christmas because we only have about 600 spots in the Student Center, and that's including our team, our support staff, and some of the support staff's family members. So it's a hot ticket. Clayton McCullough's coming back, first base coach for the Dodgers, one of my best friends, former teammate. Connor Norby and him are both going to speak, and you also hear from a couple of our older players. It's a great night, and we're so fortunate we're going to be able to have it face-to-face again.
Here recently, Coach, the 2022 schedule was released, so if you would, I mean, touch on that. One of the things that stood out to me were some new faces. You know, we had, of course, played Bryant in the regional up at UVA, but you had a three-game series with those guys, and then also St. Mary's and Virginia Tech.
Yeah, you know, Coach Palumbo and I work hard to try to get the schedule put together, and people don't understand it's years in advance. It's not, you're not doing it right now. It's years in advance, just like recruiting. And, you know, I really appreciate Scott Forbes. He's agreed to, as long as we're the head coaches at our respective institutions, that the second weekend we're going to play a three-game series. And this year we're playing two in Chapel Hill, one in Greenville. Next year we'll play two in Greenville, one in Chapel Hill, and we'll keep rotating it. We've got NC State back on the schedule for home and home. Coach Avent has been great the past few years to get that scheduled. UNC Wilmington home and home, Campbell home and home, Duke home and home. And it's just, it's a tough schedule. And then you got the American Conference in there as well. So we'll have to show up every day or we won't get where we want to go.
Coach, one final question before we let you go. Obviously, this is very important to me. I know it is to you. I always say on our show, give the man what he wants. Can we talk one more time? I want to see a massive capital campaign next year. One of the things, the pieces of that is for baseball. And can you talk again about, number one, about the things you want for, I know, former players, like a locker room, that sort of thing, and also how we can get the job done to raise the money for you to have that happen?
Well, it's unfortunate for everybody that COVID hit. Everybody got affected and pay cuts, furloughs, all that stuff. But right before COVID hit, John Gilbert and I were set to go out and fundraise and try to raise this money for the facility expansion. And it's really for the players. You know, I got two coaches. They share offices. One coach is in the coach's locker room. Our team room's too small. Our locker room. And those things underneath are really outdated. They haven't been changed since the stadium was built in 05, and we're just going to expand down the third base line. And when we do that, it'll be an opportunity for some premium seating to be above the baseball offices that will slide down the third base line. And just another great place to view or increase our stadium capacity, which is always a good thing for when we can host regionals. So we're definitely working on that. And we would love to have somebody come donate us whatever they got. And you can always donate to ECU Baseball specifically through the Pirate Club if you just put ECU Baseball only in the memo section.
All right, Coach, we'll let you run. I appreciate you for your time. If we don't talk to you, I want to wish you and your family a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and, of course, we'll have you back on to preview the 2022 campaign.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for always being great to work with, and Merry Christmas.
There you have our conversation with East Carolina head baseball coach Cliff Godwin. Always appreciate Coach coming on the program. The 2022 season is just around the corner. It'll be here before you know it. Be sure to go online to ecupirates.com or call 1-800-ECU to get your season tickets for this spring and reserve your spot at Clark LeClaire Stadium. That will do it for this edition of the program. Be sure to follow us on social media. Follow the Sports Objective on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ and also at TheSportsOBJ on TikTok. On Instagram, it's at The Sports Objective. Like and follow us on Facebook. And of course, subscribe to our YouTube channel as we're always putting out new content. Be sure to ring that notification bell so when we drop new content that you're notified on your device. For Dave Richmond and Kyle Barber, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum, and you have been listening to The Sports Objective.